Welcome back to the Sports Ticket, joined now by John Betts of Kansas Football Pregame Magazine. It is week three already, the high school football season coming up on Friday night. John's with us to look at some of the area matchups. John, what in the world? This happens when you get older. You and I, you know, we're not spring chickens anymore. As we get older, time goes by faster and faster. Wasn't it just a couple days ago you and I were previewing the beginning of this season?
Yeah, it always seems to fly by. It's just, you know, you get so busy. There's so many things going on, and then just Friday sneaks up on you like that, and before long we'll be talking about the playoffs. And then, of course, you add in the fact that, you know, you've got some eight-man teams in district play, and then you'll have Luke will be in district play into some of the other classifications here before too long. It'll have a playoff kind of atmosphere before too long anyway.
Well, let's begin the game based on the rankings, the big game, and we're looking forward to having it on the radio on Z96.3 The Lake and online, kdcountry94.com, and get the free Z96.3 The Lake app, and you can listen on your smartphone as well. Is number two Rock Hills an eight-man one against number one and eight-man two, the Hanover Wildcats. And this game on paper looks really good. Rock Hills has only played one game since there was a forfeit win in week one against Blue Valley Randolph, but Rock Hills might be a little bit shorthanded going into this one. Hanover, a juggernaut in eight-man football. And ever since Baileyville B&B closed their doors, they've taken full advantage because it was them standing in the way of championships year in and year out in eight-man football. Rock Hills and Hanover, that's a pretty nice game early in the year.
Well, and I personally have been ranking Rock Hills number two all season in my ballot that I send in to K-Prep. But that has been 100% dependent upon Zane Colson, Derek Gillett, and Riley Welch all being 100% healthy. Now, you know, going into the season, we knew that Riley suffered that injury in regional track, and we didn't know how quick he was going to be up to speed. Looking at the stats from last week, looks like he got some carries and had a pretty, you know, pretty solid outing against a team that they were quite a bit better than. But I was doing a little Adam Schefter work here right before I came on air, and it sounds like maybe they've got some injury troubles that is going to limit them in their backfield. And quite frankly, that probably puts them at a really big disadvantage against the Hanover team that has, I think, 36 kids on their roster, and they're going to have Brunas and Junimans and Zabernickies and Zabernickies and the same kids that have been pounding opponents for years in that Hanover program. And depth is such a huge factor. I mean, I think you look at that Hoxie-Osborne game last week,
yeah.
and depth and size for Hoxie was just such a huge factor in that contest. And I think if you've got a Rock Hills team that's not 100% healthy and a Hanover team that even if they have a few injuries, they probably have some kids that can come right in and step in and fill that. I'm not sure maybe it's going to be the kind of stellar game that we hoped. But let's assume that Rock Hills is able to stay healthy and get those kids healthy and make a run down the stretch like we think we can, there's potentially going to be an opportunity for Rock Hills and Hanover to have a rematch.
Rock Hills, Hanover, that's the game on Z96.3 Lake on Friday. You mentioned Osborne and Hoxie, and that was one that we kind of knew going in that Osborne, they had, I think, 11 or 12 healthy kids for that game against Hoxie. They only have 14 on the roster, and they did wear down a little bit, which is natural to do against a team that's physical, likes to run the ball, although Hoxie was able to pass the ball effectively as well in that ball game. But we talked about it. The big key for Osborne going in that game is to come out unscathed. It might be the same situation for Rock Hills against Hanover. And we've been seeing this issue for some schools, even at the 11-man level, not having a lot of kids on the roster, not having as much depth, and you're just holding your breath that a key player doesn't get hurt. But one thing's for sure, the Holloway brothers, and then you've got Cade Miller. Those three guys are off to a tremendous start for Osborne, despite the fact they lost to Hoxie last week.
And another team where a core group of players absolutely has to be healthy for them to have the kind of success that they might like to. And you talked about those three guys, and frankly, for them to make a deep playoff push, they'll have to have all those kids healthy. And so I understand that maybe Darian tweaked a hamstring or something along those lines, and so he'll have to get back up to speed and be 100% for them to make a nice run at the end of the season. And credit to Hoxie, who said, we're not going to let Darnell run for 356 yards against us And boy, did they take that away. I think he rushed for 18 yards in the game or something along those lines. So that's a really impressive Hoxie defense, obviously a defending state champion, and they are huge up front. You know, they've got a big center that's, I think he's like 6'5", 305, Tay Washington, and then a couple kids that were on our cover in Kansas pregame, and Jared Dybel and Colt Heskett, they are, you know, they're only 6 foot, 215, 225, I mean, but compared to Tay, but they're nice, they're strong, physical, very technique sound, and they certainly showed why they're the number one ranked team in A-Man 1.
Yeah, they absolutely did, and I misspoke earlier. Hanover and Rock Hills, of course, are in the same 8-man division. As you said, they could have a rematch later this year. Number one Hanover hosting number two Rock Hills coming up on Friday. Two programs that I'm pretty excited for, and they have new head coaches and are off to good starts. Thunder Ridge with Joel Struckoff, they a nice win against Washington County week 2, 12-0. You rarely see that type of defensive struggle in 8-man, and Thunder Ridge is back to playing physical football like they used to under Jerry Voorhees and won a state championship playing it that way. And then you look at Lincoln, of course, in your backyard, Dustin Petit, his team with a couple of impressive wins in week 1 and week 2, and granted the competition maybe not as strong as to get a full barometer of where they are, but at the same time, when you are starting with a new head coach, it's important to build some confidence early, and both Thunder Ridge and Lincoln have opportunities, legitimate, really good opportunities to win this week and to start the season 3-0.
Well, I think Joel struck off at Thunder Ridge. I think he's going to be the kind of coach that's going to make sure that they're doing things the right way. I actually really enjoy following his social media presence and some of the things that he puts out there to try to kind of speak to his kids and motivate his kids. And I also like in the modern era how sometimes coaches will use social media to kind of bring a community together around a message that they send to kids. And Joel, being as young as he is, has certainly embraced that. You know, I think that Washington County win was probably fairly solid last week, but we really don't know yet. You know, Washington County was a team that had a nice 3-year run at 11-man before coming on a lack of numbers. You know, I think that they even forfeited a game against Hoxie or Hoisington due to a lack of numbers last year. And so new to the 8-man ranks, kind of not sure, you know, what they have in terms of talent and skill available. Because it's a different game. You know, they talk a lot about the speed, how important speed is. And if you have speed in the backfield and you get into the open field, you know, you have guys that can catch the ball and do things, you can have a lot of success at the 8-man level. I think we'll learn a lot about Thunder Ridge against the Hill City team that is clearly improved. The Bourne kid at the quarterback who had the great success against Osborne in week 1. And I know they've got a couple other quality skill players, and they seem to be rolling up points and doing some very good things early in the season for a Hill City team that for the majority of the time that I've been covering high school football or been around, high school football has not been very good. So they have the opportunity potentially to put together a nice season. Lincoln, you know, I'm actually writing the sports for the Lincoln Sentinel right now, even though I've sold the newspaper. So I'm very engaged with what's going on with Lincoln and, of course, living here. And this Lincoln-Sylvan game that's coming up, big rivalry, big county rivalry. It's, they've played the last 10 years since Lincoln went down to 8-man, and it's the series is split at 5-5. Sylvan won the first three. Lincoln won 5 in a row, sandwich in there, and then Sylvan won the last two. I was a little surprised that Sylvan kind of got beaten fairly badly by Stockton last week, but not Stockton, great quarterback, 3-year starter and senior Brady Booker, and a dual threat guy that has rolled up passing and rushing yards over the course of his career, and so somebody that they certainly had to take away. And then I think they got stopped inside the 10 or 15 a couple times, and they missed all of their 2-point conversion tries, and so the game may be actually a little closer than the final score would indicate. But, you know, you look at Lincoln, Dustin Steve doing a really nice job with this program. A Teskett team that they open with that's really struggling this year and not a very good football team, only 10 kids. I think they suited up 8 for the first 2 games of the season. Mm. But Lincoln scored at will. And Drew Biggs, senior quarterback, 2-year starter, experienced starting as a sophomore, so really a 3-year starter, really motivated to have a fine senior season. And, he rushed for like 133 or 130 in the first game. Through his only pass was completed for a 35-yard touchdown. And then last week rushed for 207, threw for 133, and accounted for 7 total scores. Against a Wilson team that was pretty physical and pretty solid, I think the name of this Lincoln-Sylvan-Lucas game is going to be line play. Lincoln is pretty young up front on the line, and they're still kind of trying to figure it all out in terms of communication and those kind of things. And Sylvan, Sam Prince, big kid for them. Trey Barrientos, a state wrestling placer last year in the heavyweight classification. Those two kids bring experience to the table, and they're going to be physical up front. For Sylvan-Lucas, Bo Bashman moved to the running back position this year, and Tyler Barrientos is playing quarterback for them. And they're going to run the ball, and they're going to try to be, you know, kind of play a hard-nosed option style of football. But there's a lot of weapons for Lincoln, especially there's a junior, Zach O'Miller, that plays wide receiver, sophomore tight end Landon O'Hare, and sophomore running back Tyler Good, who's a kid that can run, you know, in the 11-7 range in the 100. It's all going to play out on the line of scrimmage. If Lincoln's skilled players get into open space, Sylvan's probably not going to have anybody that can catch him, but they're going to have to open up some holes up front. And I anticipate a really good game. And there's a ceremony dedicating a stadium improvements at the Lincoln's Mettner Field before that, which is probably going to bring a lot of people out from the community. And it's going to be a very exciting game with a great atmosphere. I really think you probably have the potential to see it go right down to the end.
Sylvan Lucas at Lincoln, by the way, you can hear that on KD Country 94 and KDCountry94.com. Get the free app, KD Country 94 app, on your smartphones. That should be a good one this Friday, and you can listen or go to the game there in Lincoln. It should be a fun night, the Battle of Lincoln County. Let's shift gears to the district. One particular district I want to talk to you about in 8-man, then we're going to talk 11-man with Beloit. Tescott is at St. John's Tipton, that game in Tipton on Friday. Lakeside is at Lynn. Rock Hills, non-district game there at Hanover, but Rock Hills is in that same district with Lakeside, Tescott, St. John's Tipton. Southern Cloud is at Pike Valley. Now, you and I talked about this before the season. Rock Hills, the heavy favorite to win that district. But then in regards to the pecking order after that, that district is not what it once was, of course. Pike Valley is not what they were last year. St. John's Tipton, not what they were a few years ago. Lakeside, of course, had that run for a while, and they're not where they used to be. Southern Cloud has struggled for a while. Lynn has struggled for a while. Every once in a while, they'll go 5-4, 4-5. And so you look at this district, I'm sitting here going, St. John's Tipton and Pike Valley, that could be a huge game, which we'll have on the radio later on this year, could determine who the second-best team is in that district. And with Rock Hills, if they have injuries, key people, as we talked about, maybe it'll be a little bit tighter at the top. But there's some teams in this district that are really struggling.
I absolutely think that St. John's Tipton Pike Valley game will be for the runner-up in that district. Yeah. You look at this is a district that is a perfect example of the numbers issues in small classification football. Southern Cloud, I think that they have. I just talked to a guy that teaches and coaches over there, and I think they have 14, I was thinking maybe 12 or 14 players. You and I talked about the fact that Lakeside has 12 players. Lynn, I think they started the season with 14 players, and I'm pretty sure that they didn't even have a coach nailed down for Lynn until the end of July. Mm. And then, you know, Tescott, we mentioned, they played, I believe, the first game with 8 players, and they had 10. They have 10 out, and so I'm not sure how many they suited up for last week's game, but certainly this is a top-heavy district. But I've been impressed. I think St. John's has started the season well, and they had, you know, they went from being a really young team last year, where they, you know, they fed the ball to the Brummer kid and they counted on him for about everything, to a team that's got a fair amount of experience, even though they're still relatively young. And certainly, I know very little about where Pike Valley is at this point in the season after losing all those fantastic players from last year, and a 60-0 win over Tescott, it frankly is not a great indicator of where they're at this point in the season. But it's looking like St. John's Beloit, they stay on the right path, they stay healthy, there's every opportunity for them to be a runner-up out of this district.
Then we're talking John Betts of Kansas Football Pregame Magazine, previewing week 3 of the high school football season. Now, Lakeside, and now having said all that, you know, you look at a team like a Lakeside, and this could apply to Southern Cloud or Lynn as well, But you look at a team like Lakeside, the last few years have had a just murderous schedule to start the year. Then they get into a district, they have some winnable games, and they snuck their way into the playoffs. As a result of that, also playing better against teams that are more like them. You look at Lakeside, if you can go in and win at Lynn, you gain a little confidence, you get a win at Lynn, who was smoked by St. John's Tipton last week. And Lakeside still got games against Southern Cloud and Tescott and Pike Valley and St. John's Tipton. You know, you look at Lakeside, they might end up being towards the top of that district, and many people maybe not giving them that chance, but that's just the way it is because there are probably three or four teams very, very similar.
Well, and you and I talked about this before we came on the air, that Lakeside has so many young kids.
Yeah.
And I was looking at some of their stats, you know, and there's a lot of sophomore and freshman type kids and juniors, frankly. There doesn't appear to be very many seniors that are recording statistics for that team. So when you look at game one to game four and game four to game eight for a freshman or sophomore kid that has to play that has had no experience at the varsity level before, they can make massive improvements. I mean, the types of things that you learn, you know, generally in the schools of our size, they're not watching a great deal of film in junior high. Certainly they may watch some, but are they breaking it down, and are they getting a scouting report, and, you know, is somebody giving them the huddle scout report or scouting report where they know where the best side of the opposing offensive line is and those kind of things? Those junior high kids are probably not getting those types of experiences. So when you get up to the high school and you start to watch film two and three times, and probably, you know, some kids, the great thing about the Huddle app or some of those other applications that are used is you're out there and you can watch film on your phone, you know, wherever you're at.
Yeah.
You know, sadly, for a challenge for some of the educators in the modern era is probably keeping those kids off their phone, you know, from watching film during the classroom. I can guarantee you, if I would have had access to film during the class, during the school day while I was in high school, it would have been a problem for my teachers. So I think there's a tremendous amount that can be learned for young athletes, young football players at the varsity level, when they haven't had any of those types of experiences before, where they learn how to understand a scouting report and learn what the opponent's doing and learn what they need to do along the offensive front and things like that. So certainly there's an opportunity for Lakeside to make some massive strides over the course of this season, and especially in this district where, you know, the bottom several teams seem to be pretty balanced.
All right, let's shift our attention to two 11-man games this week in our area, and we'll save Beloit for last. Wow, this is a good one. Smith Center, number one in 1A. According to K-Preps there, Phillipsburg, number one in 2A. Some other polls have Phillipsburg 2 or 3. Doesn't matter what they're ranked. This is always a good rivalry. Phillipsburg and Smith Center, they've had some really good games the last few years. They've met in the playoffs before. Of course, they won't now. Smith Center in 1A, Phillipsburg in 2A. But you know a little bit about this rivalry. Of course, many people over the years, I remember growing up, Smith Center and Norton, that was the big rivalry. Norton's not where they once were, lost a lot of talent from last year. Phillipsburg seems to be maybe this is unfair to say, but kind of the new Norton. They're the top challenger in the league to Smith Center. What are your thoughts on this big matchup at Smith Center on Friday?
Well, I am well-versed to talk about this. The first thing is my phone's been blowing up, people wanting to know, you know, what I think. And for us, when we were in high school in the early 90s, we considered Phillipsburg to be our rival, probably primarily because we're so close, only a half an hour apart. And we played some very good games with Phillipsburg back at that time. There was a period there where Smith Center, I think they won 22 consecutive contests against Phillipsburg.
Mm.
And then in 2012, Phillipsburg turned the tables and got that first win. And now they've won seven in a row, including two games in 2015 when they met in the regular season, and then they met again in the playoffs. So, you know, the first thing I think about this rivalry game is there a roadblock? Is there a mental stumbling block there at all for Smith Center, because now they've lost seven in a row and Phillipsburg seems to be growing and confident? But I think looking at these teams, and I've actually watched quite a bit of film of these teams, both teams are not quite the team that they were last year.
Mm-hmm.
But that, you know, that's pretty obvious. You graduate the kind of talent that both these squads had last year, and you're going to have to plug in some new faces and get things going. And I think this has every opportunity to be a really excellent contest. these are two smash mouth teams that are both going to run the wishbone. They're both going to run, try to run the ball right down your throat. I think there's a couple different keys in the contest. The one thing is, I think the one side of Phillipsburg's line is actually quite a bit better, quite a bit bigger, quite a bit more physical than the other side of the line. And then the other key, I think, in the contest, I think that on the defensive front for Smith Center, I think they're pretty solid all the way across the board. Even though you lose Dalton Kuhn, you know, who just, quite frankly, one of the best defensive players that classification of football has ever seen, and frankly, in the entire state. And sadly, you and I talked about this earlier in the week. Dalton Kuhn went to Fort Hays, mm-hmm. probably have an opportunity to have an outstanding career, but he blew his knee out, and he's going to miss his freshman season. So our wishes to him to get better and go on and have that great college career that we think he can. But I think that defensive front is still pretty solid in spite of those losses. And so I think that for Phillipsburg to win, I think they're going to have to pass the ball. And when you look at Trey Sides being a four-year starter, I think this kid is one of the most underrated passers in the state of Kansas. He's got a really compact release, kind of throws the ball a little bit sidearm. Actually, his release reminds me almost exactly of Colton Hutchinson, uh-huh. Smith Center's quarterback from last year, senior quarterback from last year. They have very similar release, and he really throws a nice ball, and he's very accurate. And when you look at the back end of Smith Center's defense, they graduated Colton Hutchinson, they graduated Brett Meyer, they graduated Jesse Stapleton. Those three kids are outstanding defensive backs. So have they got the new crop up to snuff, ready to go, and can, you know, will J.B. Covington utilize that passing arm that Trey Sides has and find a way to kind of maybe exploit some new defensive backfield players for Smith Center? I'll make a prediction on this, and I'm kind of semi-serious. I think it's going to be a really close game, but I think it's going to be 23-22, and I think Jonathan Honeycutt, whose father actually is from Smith Center, he's the kicker for Phillipsburg, one of the best kickers in the state of Kansas, and got quite a leg, has kicked some long field goal, kicked a 39-yarder last year in a game. I think he's going to make a field goal and miss an extra point to get the 23 points for Phillipsburg, and I think Smith Center is actually going to miss a two-point conversion and give us the 23-22 final.
Oh, that would be quite the game to go see if it turns out to be that way. 23-22, the pick by John. If it is 23-22 this Friday, I will be asking John for the Powerball numbers before Saturday night's drawing. All right, and then let's end with Beloit. Beloit lost to Southeast Saline last week. I was there for that ball game. The field was torn up certainly a little bit. Of course, there's other fields that were dealing with that and soggy conditions, oversaturated. And I really am not one that is big on making excuses about field conditions. The reason I say that is because both teams have to play on the same field. So I don't hold a lot of weight with that, although some I can see how it's frustrating for a team. Both teams played out of the spread attack and both struggled with the conditions. But Beloit, really, I told Coach Gober this earlier this week, that I'm not really big into hearing, well, we gave the game to them. You know, we lost the game. They didn't really beat us. I mean, it's kind of a slight to the other team when you say, well, we just beat ourselves. Well, the other team had to do something right in order to beat you. Having said that, this was one of those few games in all the times I've done radio where I could definitely see the viewpoint that we let that one slip away. They gifted 2 points before halftime on a safety to Southeast. They had turnovers that were unforced, bad snaps from center, not making exchanges between quarterback and running back, sometimes because of bad snaps, sometimes not. And at the end of the day, it really did feel like Beloit kind of shot themselves in the foot. Now, Southeast will tell you, we had the football 7 out of our 12 drives inside the Beloit 45, and we just wouldn't cash them. Had we done that, this game wouldn't have been close, and nobody would be saying that. I get both perspectives. It doesn't hurt Beloit that they lost this game because it was not a district game, but it's important for them to bounce back. Minneapolis is off to a 2-0 start, but they haven't played anybody super great yet. Republic County struggles. They blew them out. Sacred Heart's been struggling. They beat them in overtime. How do you look at things with Beloit after knowing what happened to them against Southeast? Because for me, I go, you know what? Field conditions were a factor. Team that runs a spread, but you know, you might have to deal with that in the playoffs. Bad field conditions, who knows? We can't predict what Mother Nature is going to do. Are you still high on Beloit, even though they lost that game?
Well, first of all, I want to say I agree with, like, everything you said. Like, while I think that Beloit was probably the better team, more experienced at the skill positions and probably more talented, you know, let's not take anything away from a Southeast Saline team that these, you know, these two teams are clearly at the top of the North Central Activities Association.
Right.
So, you know, I agree completely. Secondly, I think it could end up being a good loss.
Yeah.
It could end up being, you know, they're going to learn something from this late first half safety, where I understand there may have been, you know, some miscommunication and you know, a mistake that led to taking this safety in a bad situation. And then the other thing is they're playing a freshman center, and Dylan Marks for Southeast Saline is very similar to Dalton Kuhn in the type of defensive lineman that he is.
Yes, he is.
You know, one of the best players, all classifications, state of Kansas, that a lot of people don't know about, and the kind of kid that I think could probably play at the Division II level for, you know, Emporia State or Washburn or Fort Hays, you know, like somebody like that. That kind of talent.
Yeah.
So you got him along the line of scrimmage, and so you probably learned a lot along the line of scrimmage, your freshman center, you know, to go together with those other guys that, as I understand it, are mostly upperclassmen. You learned about how you're gonna deal with a player like that. And then your skill players, you know, you learned that simple, okay, we got to get off the field without taking a safety before the half. So,
yeah.
So those kind of lessons are probably valuable in this situation. And since it's a, you know, not a district contest, that's probably very helpful. And then you look at Minneapolis. Quite frankly, the bottom half of the North Central Activities Association is really struggling right now. Republic County, Sacred Heart, and Minneapolis, of course, improved to 2-0, but they have had three or four really bad seasons after John Hahn's, you know, excellent start, where they went to the quarterfinals of the playoffs or whatever. So
Yeah. This
is probably the opportunity to be a get-right game for Beloit, and you hope that they come out and they execute, and they do all the kind of things that they want to do. They seem to want to be versatile on offense, to be able to both run the ball and pass the ball, and I think that's certainly great to have that heading into the district play. And then you look at their district, heading into their district, and I just think that there's a number of games there that could go any way, either way. I mean, Colby with Jordan Shippers, they've moved Jordan Shippers to the quarterback. He was one of the best running backs, the most versatile running backs in the state of Kansas. Now he's in that quarterback role for them and happened to kind of take on that leadership position. Concordia, I don't think we quite know where Concordia is at yet. Obviously, Scott City is going to be the class of that district and possibly the best team in the classification, very deep, very talented. And so it's going to be a long stretch run. So they need to execute some things. They need to have to eliminate mistakes, and they need to gain confidence as they get ready to pick up steam heading into district play.
Yeah, I would agree with you. The one thing I could take out of that game for Beloit, a couple of big things. One, their defense was fantastic with their backs to the wall repeatedly and did a wonderful job, and their defense has been good through two games. And Hudson Gray, which I know we talked about him last time you were on, he marched them down the field in 2 minutes and 5 seconds. They had 2:41 on the clock. They were down, 14-7, and they go on a 10-play, 92-yard drive with 2:41 left, and they score with 36 seconds left. They went for two, which was the right call based on the conditions, and it the throw was on the money. It was just a great defensive play by Seth Eklund. So there's some things to build on, like you said, and things to learn from as well for that loss for Beloit. Beloit at Minneapolis, live video stream at nckfsports.com via the Beloit Trojan channel. All right, John. John Betts of Kansas Football Pregame Magazine is with us. Time for an off-the-wall question. John, I want to know, I'm getting a little personal here with you. The last time, John, that you were scolded like the chair umpire was on Saturday at the U.S. Open, and when you were last scolded, was the language worse or better than what Serena used the other day?
Well, if you've ever seen me coach, I was a pretty fiery guy on the sideline, and I used to sometimes have some run-ins with some officials, and I'm going to be honest and sincere about this. I really regret any of those experiences where I ever might have lost my temper and said anything that I shouldn't have. Rare. I think there's two or three occasions, but I do remember, and this was actually the fall of 97 when I was an assistant coach at Waukini, and I had kind of lost my temper about a call, and I had a guy come back at me with a very stern shut up. and so I don't know that the situation was necessarily as bad as what went on with Serena and the judge, but I will tell you, I did shut my mouth right at that minute because I remembered that I was modeling behavior to a group of kids.
Yep.
And that I was dealing with somebody that, you know, doesn't get paid enough and doesn't deserve to have any kind of criticism for me.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't know if that official remembers that or not. I actually think it was Shane McCall, who is from Smith Center.
Uh-huh. Oddly enough.
But I don't know if he remembers that or not, but I remember just thinking, you know, I just need to quiet down here because I'm not setting a good example for my kids.
Well, good for you that you thought that and pulled back, because there's a lot of coaches and parents and fans that don't, and that's part of the reason why we have a shortage of officials across the country, and it's becoming a bigger and bigger issue. So I appreciate you doing that, and hopefully that would spread to other coaches and parents and fans to understand that, like you said, these folks aren't getting paid a lot of money to be yelled at and screamed at when they make a mistake, but don't get applauded when they get the call right. John, as always, appreciate the time. Week 3 coming up here on Friday. Enjoy high school football, and are you going to be at the Lincoln County Rivalry on Friday? Are you going to be there covering that?
Yes, I will be at the Lincoln County Rivalry. That's easy for me to say. and I will add, it's not too late to get a hard copy of the magazine.
That's right.
It's not too late to read the digital edition. It's the kind of thing that you need to have in your arsenal all season long, whether it be in your, you know, on your ottoman or in your van for the ride to the game, or, you know, in your bathroom, if that's where you do a lot of your intense reading. But if you go to kansaspregame.com, you can find a list of locations to pick up a copy, or you can find a link to this year's digital edition, and you can bone up on the opponents for the rest of the year.
Well, and it looks awesome, and I love it's all in color. I mean, that just pops. The picture on the front absolutely draws your attention right to the magazine. As always, like I said last time, you guys do a wonderful job with that magazine. It takes a lot of work and a job well done.
Well, thank you. We really appreciate it. I really appreciate you having me on. It's always fun, and we covered a lot of great stuff today.
There was a lot of teams we covered. We'll do it again sometime soon. John, you take care of yourself, and we'll talk to you again here down the line, and enjoy the Lincoln County Rivalry on Friday.
Thanks a lot.
All right, that's John Betts of the Kansas Football Pregame Magazine. As he mentioned, you can still get your magazine if you need a copy. They're at various sponsorship locations across the state of Kansas, so get your copy today.